It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now, we tread lightly here in this long-running debate about world-class Parmesan cheese from Wisconsin. The podcast Decoder Ring dares to ask that question: is a Wisconsin version more authentic than its beloved Italian counterpart? That is Parmigiano Reggiano, and that is from a particular region in Italy. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Mike Matuszewski is a Wisconsin master cheesemaker known for developing Sartori's Bellavitano, a Parmesan-like cheese. Mike, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning, and Willa Paskin here as well, writer and host of the Slate podcast, Decoder Ring. Willa, hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. So let's talk a little bit about this episode on Parmesan and really looking at the authenticity. What made you want to compare these different cheeses and wade into this debate?
Yeah, so there is a really fun article in the Financial Times, the newspaper, the Financial Times, a couple months ago about Italian food myths. It was written by an Italian woman, and it interviewed this Italian scholar who lives in Italy and loves Italy, but also really thinks that Italians are very precious about a lot of things about their food. Italians are very precious about a lot of things about their delicious food. And one of the asides, or one of the sort of the paragraphs in the piece, this scholar sort of says, you know, if you want like Parmesan that tastes like what Parmesan tasted like in Italy 100 years ago, the stuff in Wisconsin is more authentic. It tastes more like what everyone was eating 100 years ago than the stuff coming out of Italy now. And that's just so counterintuitive and fun. And I needed to know more, basically.
And there begins your journey. And so you run into, or one of your sources is this food history professor, Alberto Grandi, who, you know, tells you that Wisconsin Parm tastes more like Parmesan made 100 years ago in Italy, and that's controversial. So what did you learn from Alberto?
So Alberto Grandi, he knows so much, and he was very gracious and fun, and he's also a bit of a rabble-rouser. I am like this too, but he's like a little contrarian, so he kind of likes... He's like a little, he used to be in politics. Like, he doesn't mind sort of tweaking people. So he sort of got us started because he sort of said this thing, and it was based on actually a lot of visual research that he's done, because frankly, none of us can taste cheese from 100 years ago, right? So it was based on sort of archival research about what Parmesan used to look like in movies and in advertisements, and sort of knowing the history of the consolidation of the industry in Italy, and also knowing a little bit about the story of how Parmesan had come to Wisconsin in the first place. So that was sort of our point of origin. Mm-hmm. And then actually we just like went really nuts, and it involves also speaking with Mike about how Parmesan came to Wisconsin in the first place.
I was going to say, well, speaking of nutty, but I'm talking about the cheese, really. No.
Oh, I'm very nutty.
So, and you love cheese history. So before you retired as a master cheesemaker in 2020, you were making Italian-style cheese for Sartori and Antico. How did working for a family-owned company founded by an Italian immigrant, how did that shape you as a master cheesemaker?
Let's see. How did that shape me? Well, it had some influence. When my history actually goes back to Kraft cheese, because that's the plant was established by Kraft in Antigo. Mm-hmm. And then the employees bought it in 1993, shortly after I joined the company, Kraft. So then for 13 years, it was Antigo employees. And then Sartori bought it in 2006. And it was a curiosity walking into, well, what do these people know and all this kind of stuff? And what is the heritage? And honestly, their Italianness wasn't that strong. I was really struck by that. But as they, you know, grew the company since then, it's just like their heritage has become more important. And when, you know, they started sharing the story of, you know, the founder, Paolo Sartori, he's a classic immigrant, but he wasn't a cheesemaker in Italy. He came to America, worked a bunch of different jobs, you know, made connections with Count Bolognese, who founded Stella Cheese, mm-hmm. and, you know, and then went off on their own. So again, it was, you know, I think it's natural for a culture to want to recreate their foods and all the other, the music, whatever that goes with that. So, you know, that Sartori was definitely doing when they started making cheese in 1939 in Plymouth. They were making mozzarella and provolone and Parmesan and Asiago. But again, you know, the taste change and what's better business to do. So eventually they became more into Parmesan and more into food service. But when they purchased the Anago Cheese Company, Anago had a very, very small retail business, about $250,000 in sales.
Mm-hmm.
And Sartori was interested in that aspect of the company. But it, you know, now it's like you're looking at, I can't even, it's in excess of $120 million worth of retail sales, I think, right now. Major growth. And it's, you know, it's just how to succeed in business without really trying is what I always, you know, tease everybody about. Somehow incredible cheese was formed and it got out the door and a lot of people did a lot of work to make it happen. And that was fun and interesting for sure.
That is part of the Wisconsin side of the story, as well as we talk about Italian and Wisconsin Parmesan. And we have retired Wisconsin cheesemaker Mike Matuszewski and Willa Paskin, who is a podcaster at Slate. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Willa, the economic side of the cheese, how does the commercial manufacturing of cheese in Italy and Wisconsin cause Parmesan cheese to diverge in taste and price?
Well, yeah, so Mike just alluded to sort of the story, but basically the story is this incredibly named man, Italian man named Count Bolognese, came to Wisconsin as a diplomat and started this cheese farm factory eventually in really high up in northern Wisconsin, close to the UP. And basically what happens in America, so that's starting like right around the 1920s. And after World War II, there's sort of, as soldiers are coming back, there's sort of like this boom in interest in foods from Europe. This is when the wine industry also starts to take off a little bit. And you actually, this is when Kraft starts to make their grated Parmesan for sale. So you start to see in America the spread of Parmesan, also sort of the rise of like Italian American food, sort of like red sauce places and pizza actually and frozen lasagna. And so Parmesan in America is actually changing. It's sort of becoming like less Italian and more just thought of as American food. And the taste is changing.
Shake
too,
it on,
right?
Shake it on to anything.
Exactly. Shake it on to anything. And also like, you know, the people that are eating it, we don't have, like Americans, most Americans don't have some frame of reference for what Parmesan is supposed to taste like, right? It could kind of taste like anything as long as it tastes good, or as long as it tastes good on pizza or pasta or whatever you're eating. So there's no kind of, there's no like establishing line, there's no base. So there's a lot of freedom to make it taste sort of however, good, bad, different. And that sort of happens. And meanwhile, in Italy, there sort of was a consortium formed in around Parma, the city of Parma, which is in Emilia Romagna, sort of in the north central part of the country, which is like a very affluent region in Italy. There's a big movement to sort of protect a lot of the specialty foods, including Parmesan. I mean, like prosciutto to Parma. There's tons of sort of protected foods that come out of Italy and France and all across Europe. So there's sort of this consolidation of how you're supposed to make Parmigiano Reggiano, which
there
had been made
traditionally. Yeah.
Right. And it had been made traditionally, like relatively traditionally for like hundreds of years. It's from the 13th and 14th century. That's when it first pops up. But you see it get like really regulated. Like you have to stick to those rules instead of just people sticking to those rules because that was the custom and the tradition. It's like it has to come out of this specific area and you have to make it in these certain ways. Like, you know, Mike knows all these rules way better than I do. But there's
European
a lot
says, yes.
Yeah. And like, and so that actually, of course, that also, you know, it sort of standardizes the quality, but it also locks it in a certain way. And there had been, you know, people were making Parmigiano Reggiano in a much sort of like in the late 1800s, the best Parmigiano Reggiano was actually coming out near Milan, not near Parma, you know, but they like sort of lock it into a certain area and they make the wheels slightly bigger, you know, not ton bigger, but because they're basically like, it's this, you know, they want to be able to sell more of it and ship more of it. And they, you know, they used to have sort of like this black rind that just sort of formed naturally. And they kind of actually start scraping that off so that they can, so they can actually market, because Parmigiano Reggiano is so expensive and such a gourmet product that it actually costs a lot of money. And so there's,
I thought that was really brilliant, kind of like, you know, proof that it's the real thing.
Yeah, because people steal Parmigiano Reggiano. Like, it's a, it's a, there's a black market in this cheese. Like, that's how expensive
Mike,
it is.
Mike, yeah. What do you make of that?
That's their branding power. It's actually quite genius. And again, they're not just competing with Parmesan that's made in Wisconsin, that's also in Germany, whatever. And then within Italy, there's a cheese called Grana Padano, which looks identical to Reggiano, and it can be made in a far greater geographic area. And it's a great cheese as well. And again, for, you know, the well, I'll call it a scheme that they came up with to regulate and market and ensure quality is a really, you know, for them, a really good idea. I did actually happen to talk to an individual who used to work for the consortium as one of the inspectors, and he goes, yeah, the cheesemakers don't always love them because, you know, there are rules. And, you know, things happen, and okay, if things aren't quite up to snuff, it's like you get, that cheese gets kicked out. And they're very rigid that way. But it does ensure the quality.
That is Mike Matuszewski. He is a Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker, mentor at UW-Madison Center for Dairy Research. We have Willa Paskin as well, digging into the distinction between Parmesan from Wisconsin and Parmigiano Reggiano that hails from Italy. You can ask a question, share a comment throughout the discussion, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Could Wisconsin Parmesan be more authentic than what you might get in Italy? We explore that question. It was posed in a recent episode of the podcast Dakota Ring. Writer Willa Paskin hosts it, went on a Parmesan fact-finding mission with an open mind. And we have Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker, known for his take on Parmesan. That is Mike Matuszewski. Also here, be part of the conversation. Call in with a question or thoughts on cheese, 800-642-1234. Willa, your podcast, you conducted a blind taste test of cheeses, including a trademark Parmigiano Reggiano from Italy and a Sartori Parmesan, which Alberto Grandi declared to be more authentic. How did that taste test go?
Yeah, sure. So we had like 8 cheeses, and a bunch of them were cheeses, like American-made Parmesans, including a Sartori that you could find in a grocery store.
Bunch of decoys in there.
Yeah, Grana Padano. There's also, Argentina has their own version of this. It's called the Reggianito, like their own Parmesan descendant. That was in there. So we tasted them all. I had never done a cheese tasting. It's kind of like fun. Just like I was doing it with this guy who's done a bunch of them. You like smell the cheese, you squeeze the cheese.
Squish it, right?
Yeah, totally. Like you see it, all of this, you listen to it even, you see if it squeaks a little bit, which you guys know about. I would say that part of the, there's a bias in a taste test like this, which is that I had mentioned earlier that there was a time and perhaps a lot of Americans didn't really have a baseline for what Parmigiano Reggiano or just Parmesan was supposed to taste like. But I don't know that that's so true anymore, because Parmigiano Reggiano, like the big gourmet wheels, are actually, you can find them in tons of places now. They're in lots of cheese stores.
Grocery stores.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. You know, you can get them like when you order your groceries on the internet, like all of those things. So we sort of have an idea of what it's like supposed to taste like. And, you know, people have different tastes and different palates, but I kind of want it to taste like what I was expecting it to taste like. So sort of to our mind, the classic, the Italian cheese won at tasting the most like what I think, you know, Parmesan supposed to taste like.
Mike, how do you think about that little taste test there? that your Parmesan didn't fare as good there.
So I'm going to say, yeah, I'm obviously disappointed, but not surprised. No, not at all. In particular, in that area, New York City area, the Northeast, they are very traditional in their taste. And it's been really difficult for any domestic Parmesan cheesemaker to get into that market. You know, we dealt with brokers over the years, and things like Parmesan or Asiago, they go, don't even bother. Our customers won't buy it. And again, you know, there is a difference in flavor. There is a difference in texture. And I'm not sure which Sartori Parmesan you sampled in this. There is the standard 10-month-old, and then there's the much more flavorful 20-month cheese that has the brand name Sarvecchio.
Yes, I ordered the Sarvecchio off the internet. I was really trying to get the real stuff. I think we had both, but I it was a Sarvecchio. Okay. I knew we were supposed to get that one.
and again, there are differences. And again, it's like it really comes down to people's preferences. And I'm not offended at all by that you preferred the Reggiano over anything else. And recently, we did a program at Center for Dairy Research to train a bunch of people in the cheese industry, specifically around hard Italian cheeses and what they are and the background for all of them. And in that tasting, there was like 20 odd people. They preferred Reggiano first and Sarvecchio was second.
Why though, Mike, why is sweetness in Parmesan important? Because sweetness kept coming up in that tasting.
Sweetness is important because as humans, we love sweet things. We really, really do.
Oh, the truth comes
Sour
out.
Generally turns us off, but it's also an indication that the cheese is broken down to a point where it's highly digestible. There's a long tradition, folklore, that if you're sick, Parmesan cheese is one of the best things to eat. They, you know, prescribe it for mothers who are nursing and things like that. You know, there's purported health benefits. And, you know, Sartori is one that will promote that. And, you know, just the industry in general promotes that because, again, it's so well aged. And it's actually, there's no lactose in the cheese because of its long aging process. So those who have a lactose intolerance, they can try it. And if they're cautious, they will find that it's just like, okay, if you're truly lactose intolerant, that won't bother you. You might have a dairy protein issue, but if it's just a pure lactose intolerance, you can generally eat Parmesan cheese all day long.
All day long. That is Wisconsin cheesemaker Mike Matuszewski. And we have Willa Paskin here, podcaster, as they looked into Italian and Wisconsin Parmesan. You can join in at 800-642-1234. So Willa, you know, one of the takeaways from your podcast episode was that, like, I just wrote down, seasons change, people change, foods are always changing.
Turn. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And, that's such an important takeaway. Like, the tools over 100 years ago, they're not the same as today, and the taste buds are different. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think what's interesting about that in the context of food in particular is that it's not, you know, it's like not just a cliche, because I think we really like to think food is so tied up in our traditions, right? And we really like to think that we can be traditional, that like we can pass recipes and foods down to our children, and our grandmothers and grandfathers can pass them down to us, and that, you know, things can sort of like, there can be some still center and we can taste what our ancestors tasted. And I think the truth is that like, that just isn't exactly true, which doesn't mean that the thing we're eating isn't beloved and meaningful and full of all this memory, but it's like, no, everything changes even if you think it's not. And that sort of, I mean, I think the story of Parmesan is like, I think in America, especially about a food like Parmesan, we're probably pretty comfortable with the idea that like American-made Parmesan has changed and is changing because its whole existence seems like, well, it was about change in the first place. I got to get here. But in Italy, I think it, where sort of a lot of this food stuff is much more tied up in sort of the idea of like, of things being locked in. It's like, I mean, and this is sort of Alberto Grandi's point in raising this whole rabbit hole about Parmesan is like, even when you think something is set in stone and it's been the way it is for 800 years, you view that is probably not the case.
Well, thank you both for joining us. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Willa Paskin. Yes, Mike. Willa Paskin, writer and host of the Slate podcast, Dakota Ring, Mike Matuszewski, retired award-winning master cheesemaker. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's a morning show on the Ideas Network.